Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I truly appreciate all the love and the support that you've been getting so far. Today we got an excellent episode. I got a guest, Ken Blanchard, Black Man with the Gun Podcast, is going to be joining me. And I so appreciate him coming on the show. I did not know that he was actually a reverend. Did you all know that? Well, if you didn't, now you know. So anyway, we'll just jump right into the episode. And what's in particular is that, you know, with technology, you know, it works right. It works sometimes, if you guys know what I'm saying. I tried to start the recording a little bit earlier, but I was having some issues with Skype. We're going to pick up the interview where it's already kind of in progress. So that's a little bit of my own mishaps with the recording. Like I said, technology, it works really well, except for when it doesn't. So once again, thank you to Ken Blanchard, Black Man with the Gun Podcast. Make sure you check him out. And here we go. Let's jump into it. So we're good. So just to answer your question, I was a Waterbury police officer, city Waterbury police officer, 24 years. I just retired back in February, retired at the rank of captain. I am truly enjoying what I'm doing today. Like many other people, man, I really wanted to kind of plan for my retirement. I think I did that right. Now, my retirement came upon me really kind of sudden because even though I can do 20 and out, I was going to do a little bit more time. Uh-huh. But my daughter is in school and everything like that. So I want to work with her and make sure that I was working while she's in college. So nice. Last year I took a hit. As a matter of fact, it was almost a year ago at this time. I was actually in the hospital. I ended up having a triple bypass. So between the triple bypass and I had some other eye problems, I said, you know what, this is it for me. I'm going to call it quits and just kind of take everything and just do what I got to do.
Okay.
As far as that. So. Listen, I truly, truly appreciate you being on the show, man. I really welcome you to Captain Hunter's Podcast. Thank you so much. I've watched or listened to a number of your episodes for a long time, and I really appreciate how, for lack of better terms, how pro-black and how pro-positive you are, especially your podcast about gun rights, Jews and blacks, your one about gun control, white man's law, and NRA Secret Revealed. Those really, really touched me, and that's why I decided to reach out to you.
Okay.
So I saw another one today that I didn't see before. I'm going to have to listen to. That's Free Men Own Guns, Slaves Don't. I'm definitely going to take a listen to that one.
Yeah. So the lesson there is your titles matter.
Yes.
Because I have 626 episodes. So it is definitely the titles that matter. It makes people want to see what you're talking about.
Yeah, I got you. I definitely got you. Could you just tell the audience a little bit about yourself? And now we're talking to Reverend Ken Blanchard of Black Man with a Gun Podcast. Thank you for being on the show once again. Please tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
All right, Captain Hunter. I am a former Marine, former CIA officer, current pastor. I have a church now that's totally online. I started off a church that was in a brick and mortar building, but I've been involved in the internet stuff since 2000. So when podcasting came out and whatever, and it came out, I jumped on board pretty early. So I've been podcasting for about 12 years now. I have managed to be a gun rights activist, worked with all the gun rights groups since 1999 and before, actually, 1992. That's where Black Man with a Gun came from. I was a CIA firearms trainer for both law enforcement and civilians. We had a little quasi-professional police department within the CIA. And I was a lieutenant there. I've been there, done that, and bought a t-shirt. And try my best to just share knowledge with people. The podcasting game and social media happened while I was working. And not to disclose any national secrets, I was able to just keep people informed, share stories, try to pep them up a little bit when they fall down. And I've been using this thing as a ministry, almost, even when I wasn't preaching on it.
Wow. Now, I did not know that you were actually a reverend. I think when I just really started Googling you for this particular episode, that's when I figured out you were a reverend. So you are online church. Can you explain that to me a little bit?
Yeah. When I went, when I got licensed to preach back in 2001, I went at this church in Washington, D.C., and our pastor said, all right, everybody has a calling. Where do you see yourself going? And I say, I kind of want to pick up where Billy Graham left off. I saw myself as an evangelist, not really having a brick and mortar church. It took about 4 or 5 years later that I actually was pastor in a church, but I was not happy staying in the walls of a traditional Baptist, doing the same stuff. And I wanted to reach more people. And the internet was just growing, and I thought, this could be it right here. I could, like, just minister to people wherever they were. And most of the people that I talked to were men. I'm a motorcyclist, a hunter, a shooter, recreational guy. I like being outside, a fisherman. I fish in a puddle. And my audience doesn't necessarily go to church. So when I was actually getting invitations to speak, I was the guy they'd pull for Men's Day and the minister to men. So I made sure that my podcast did exactly that. I made sure I ministered to that guy who might be out on a shooting blind this week or out on a boat and he missed service. I'm talking to the biker that loves God, loves outdoors, but didn't feel real good in the church. And this thing grew. It changed a couple of different times. I started a podcast, stop it, try something else, go back to it, change the name. And right now, we're solid now. We're a regular entity in Maryland, 501c charity. It's called Speak Life. And I put a new episode out every Sunday morning at 1 o'clock in the morning. And it's more than just men now. Now it's a little bit of everybody. And I get the chance to minister. And if somebody needs me to do a wedding, a funeral, a baptism, I travel to them. So it's I'm doing my calling using the internet.
Now, this is the first I've ever heard of that. So you grew up in a Baptist ministry? Is that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. The Southern Baptist or just regular Black Baptist or?
Just regular Black Baptist is probably the best way to say it. Yeah. And then before I actually took on that call, I've been inquisitive about the Lord forever. So I tried to go to everybody's church. I wanted to see how people worship God around the world. And that was interesting. So it kind of flavored my preaching and teaching a little bit different because I try to be a communicator. I'm not really a preacher.
Okay. Right. That's really, really interesting. I grew up in the faith tradition myself. Today, I'm not religious. My wife still is. And I have a lot of friends are. And a friend of mine, he was pastoring for a while. He's about my age. He's a couple of years younger than me. I'm 46. He's probably 42, 43, something like that. And so he's pastoring for a while. Inner city, really bad neighborhood he was living in and all that kind of stuff. So he closed down a church because it was, you know, essentially having financial problems and things like that. So I'm actually going to tell him about you, and I hope I hope that you don't mind, because I think that he really has a heart to continue doing the ministry, but due to finances, he closed it down. So I think that what you're doing is really good. I mean, it sounds really good to me. I mean, as far as your ability to network and use the internet to your advantage, I never heard of that, and I never would have thought of that. I mean, obviously, you see TV preachers all the time, but I think that the internet is probably something that's completely different.
So much so that I'm ready to help other preachers and ministers do this. I mean, I'd show them everything that I know and show them what works. Because the what's funny is that the porn industry is what started all this stuff. Yeah. I mean, they had all the internet, they had the webcams, all that stuff took the lead, and we can use the same stuff now. Most of the stuff is free. We've gone full circle. Yeah. If you just learn what works, you can also take your ministry to the street.
Yeah. That's a good point. And matter of fact, I remember I was watching a documentary on porn, and it was talking that porn actually has been on the cutting edge of almost every single industry that we have today.
Yeah.
You know, TV, they were some of the first to get into TV, even snail mail with pictures and stuff. They used. And so, so when the internet hit, they were the first ones to really make it big and show other people the way. So you're absolutely right with the webcams and all that. It's really a booming business. Wow. That's awesome. So you've been preaching and an ordained minister now for how long did you say?
Since 2001.
2001. And you've been podcasting, I heard, for 20 years. Did I hear that right? Doing this
podcast? 12
years. So I was listening to the most recent episodes you had. I think it was with Coleon Noir.
Yep. Am I saying his name? Just released that one.
Yes, yeah. I was checking that out today. And so, so Coleon was really good. That's where I got the 20 years from. I think you might have said you've been doing this for 20 years. You really had some good pointers. And I try to listen to everyone I can because I'm so such a novice in this game. So I'm trying to pick up and learn everything I can. But once again, I thank you for being on the podcast. And I just want to kind of ask you some questions about, you know, what you got going on and your purpose and your focus as far as Black Man with a Gun. Could you just tell us a little bit about that? And I mean, you talked a little bit about how you know, your background with the Defense Department and things like that. Could you just tell us a little bit more about your passion for getting black people to have a gun or own a gun or whatever?
When I got started in 1991, I wanted to become, well, I did become, I was a firearms instructor. I had a training business. I did the CPR, the first aid, and got folks qualified for armed duty. In my area, Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, there are a boatload of security and police officer groups. So I thought I was in the prime place for my new little company. The bad news was I looked too young to know anything. And all the retired cops had to hook up with all the ranges that we had. So it was hard. I took a whole bunch of lumps, learned a whole bunch of lessons about overhead and cost analysis and knowing your competition and all that. So the business kind of started to fold on me. But I learned about gun rights. I learned that it was not equal. There were a whole bunch of people of color, black, brown, yellow, that did not go to the range like the other folks did. And I wanted to know why. So I started hanging out at the ranges, talking to people. And I found out there was this group called the National Rifle Association that was really big on the Second Amendment. So I did a little bit of research and learned that the whole gun argument was one of the four or five arguments that's always evergreen in every political argument forever and a day. They've always argued about guns. The problem was never solved. Gun control never ended. It's always an argument. It's not going to die. So I thought, what if I got involved in this business that the NRA was involved in? So I thought I'd be a sneak attack, and I'd go and visit one of the board meetings and see what these good old boys was doing. Mm-hmm. I went to a meeting dressed in my motorcycle attire and figured I'd just hang out in the back and see what folks were doing. And I got in this room, this banquet hall in Arlington, Virginia, and everybody had a tux on except for me. I stood out like a sore thumb. And I had it all wrong. It was three directors that came over and said, "Hey, man, what brings you here?" And I said, "I'm just checking you guys out. I'm not a member or anything. I'm a firearms trainer." And that was that. And they were like, "Man, make sure that you stay away from the camera. There's a camera people, there's a media folks here, and they will paint you as a bubba if they see you over here in your jeans and we're all dressed up. They'll make you look bad." And I thought, "Man, these three guys don't even know me. And they're trying to protect me from the media."
Right.
I said, "Okay." So they said, did you know about the history of gun control in the black community?" And I was like, "No, not really. But talk to me. What are you saying?" Man, these three guys wore my ear out for about an hour and a half okay. of stuff I had never heard of in my life. And I felt bad. I thought, yeah, I should know this. I should know this stuff. So I went home, called a couple of uncles I know that hunt. And there were been NRA members forever, but never really talked about it, and hit them with the same information. And they confirmed and added to the stories. And I became on fire right then. I wanted to know everything about the right to keep and bear arms as it involved us as a people, and became a lover of history, lover of telling stories and being like the orator of our own stuff. And from that point on, I got invited back to a dinner that they were having. And I was in a whole different mindset the next time I met these guys. I had formed a new company, and it was called African American Arms and Instruction. And they were like, "Oh, man, this is great. We don't have any pro-black people, except for we got Roy Ennis. He's one of our directors. I never heard of that brother either." Mm-hmm. And it took my journey to becoming a speaker, becoming an activist, traveling around the country, getting paid by them. And I'm trying to do that and not get fired from my government job. I was scared to death.
Right.
They were going to get me for that. And I did it and became the black man with a gun. And then in 1999, I wrote a book, kind of a homage to a man from Williams that wrote it in Negroes with Guns.
Yes, yes, yes.
In 1968, it hadn't been anything written since then. So I thought, all right, I'm going to publish this. I'm going to get on Oprah, get on that book club. Help my people out.
Right.
We're going to have like a peaceful revolution, change some minds, save some lives. I started a gun club in 1992 called the 10th Cavalry, and my world changed. I didn't know anything about people, really, about getting my folks together, and it was, I had some amazing stuff happen, man, in the next couple of years after that. And it was all before social media, so most of the stuff didn't get captured like it does today, but it changed my whole life.
How has your response been amongst other African Americans? Now, you grew up a little further south than I did. You grew up in Maryland, is that right? Is that where you grew up at?
I grew up actually in between Maryland and Tidewater, Virginia.
Okay. How have you been received amongst other black people, right? You grew up hunting, you grew up fishing, things like that. You grew up much further south than I did. Connecticut people, Connecticut black people in particular, not really into all that hunting, fishing. There are some that do it, obviously, but nowhere near to what I hear it's like in the South. So how did other black people that you grew up around take to your newfound passion?
I had two different, well, it was like five groups of people that I found out. I had the older cats that had grew up fishing, hunting, always had a firearm. They were veterans. They always had firearms. But the culture of our people is not to tell anybody that you're pro-gun. Before social media, when everybody was taking pictures of their firearms and showing where they did it at a range, back in the day, you just didn't tell what you had. Because there was laws that actually prohibited you from having it. Your parents would turn you in if you brought a gun home. Mm-hmm. We had veterans and law enforcement officers in our families, and we knew they had guns, but it wasn't something that you would talk about openly. So I was breaking stereotypes, and they were like, hey, man, I'm with you, but I'm not going to go on camera, or I'm not going to go on the radio with you to talk about this thing. I just, when the revolution comes, we're doing that Gil Scott-Heron thing like to a T, man. And I found out that there was five groups that I would find. They were like college-educated brothers who was just into it. And they were wanted to be like Garvey.
Right. Right.
Then we had the vets. They had brought guns home from wars, or they were, because of what they had been trained, they had weapons of their era. There were the hunters and the old school brothers. There were the militant guys that were waiting for the revolution, and they didn't join the military, but they had everything that you could buy out of a Soldier Fortune magazine. The guys were kind of scary sometimes.
Yeah.
And then, and then it was just the new people who had been victims of a crime.
Right.
And they said never again.
Right.
So they had learned and got training. And those were the kind of personalities that I ran into in our community. And it just grew. It just grew from that. And as time has gone on, like in the beginning, there's no way I was the only black man with a gun, but they just thought I was the boldest brother out here for having put that on a book cover. Churches got mad at me. They wanted to kick me out, wanted to take my ministry license away from me because I was promoting violence. And
Yeah.
So I caught hell in the beginning, man. It was not a good decade. I mean, from 90 to 2000 was some rough times.
Yeah. Listen, I can definitely understand that. I can remember growing up when the Malcolm X movie came out. My church was totally against it. You know, we don't believe in this. This man promoted violence and this, that, and the other. So what do I do, man? I go out and buy the book, you know, buy his autobiography. Yes. I read the book. I'm like, this man had nothing but positive things to say when you start really researching, you know, what it is. So I can certainly understand that there's a certain level of one of those five different types of groups of people you listed. There's certainly a level of ignorance to people, man, and a lot of just fear. And I believe that a lot of the reasons that we did not do a lot of things as far as black people is because of the fear. Of course, they lived under a certain oppression, obviously.
Yes.
But that I know that they just were just scared to own guns or come out and say they own guns. I know a lot of people today who still don't believe in voting. And I think that has a lot to do with just that fear of retaliation from other people. And it's just a terrible thing.
We it's a thing called Stockholm syndrome when you get snatched by somebody and then you take on the same issues of your oppressor. We got generations of people, man, that have been affected from fear of law enforcement, fear of voting, fear of owning a gun, because there were laws that if you didn't vote the right way, they snatch your land or take your possessions. Or if you even, there's laws on the books that if you even had a musket ball in your house, citizens could come out there and lynch you. So you got mothers and grandmothers and great grandmothers who didn't want their men to be killed. They would say, baby, if you won't be a good person, you won't do that stuff. And it's ingrained in us. We don't even know the reasons why we don't do stuff. We just know we want to be a good person and make it to the next generation. So we dog that thing. And then you got preachers who never test a firearm, but that most of their congregation are women and they want to please them. So they're going to agree with the same stuff. And it's a perpetuation of ignorance and it just keeps on going. And then you got this one brother talking about, if you don't arm yourself, you're going to harm yourself. Man, I'm lucky I ain't got shot by my own people by now. I mean, but it's just times have gotten better.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I can remember a friend of mine. He had a pretty good job. I think he was a corrections officer at the time. So he was dealing with something. He was kind of sick. And I'm like, man, why don't you go to the doctor? He's like, oh, man, I don't go to the doctor. I'm like, listen, brother, you got to go to the doctor, man. I mean,
yeah.
this fear, and I broke it down kind of like you just did. We got generations of problems. Black people obviously didn't go to the doctors because of
cost.
Yeah, cost and the whole syphilis thing that they did to us, and they were experimenting on us. So I get it, man. But this is a new day, new time. You got the insurance, man. Ain't no need of you sitting home just suffering. Get up and go to the doctor, man. So that generation thing is real. It's real.
Yeah.
How have white people taken to your podcast, the name of your podcast? They talked about the three brothers that you met at the NRA meeting, and they kind of schooled you, put you onto some stuff, which is really good and really surprising to hear. I'm going to be honest with you. That's really shocking for me to hear that. But it's good that they are willing to share that kind of history. How have other people been towards your podcast and the name of it and what you're doing?
Dude, I was radical, militant as a mug until I started this gun rights thing, and it messed me up because the first people who embraced me did not look like me. Every time I said black man with a gun, I saw brothers duck their head and look around to see who was listening. And I saw white people go, yeah, you tell them, brother. And I'm thinking, what? I'm in a bizarre world here. Something ain't right. Then I get invitations to dinner and I get invitations to go to ranges. And I'm thinking, all right, this is a setup. I'm going to go out here and I'm going to be the target. I'm looking for the racism to happen. You know, I got a gun out and I got a gun hidden just in case something happened. And I got nothing but love, man, from white cats, man. And it messed me up. I was not ready for that. I got invited to Tennessee, of all places, the middle of nowhere. And I went like a fool. went out there to the middle of nowhere. And they had, like, I don't know, must have been 20 acres. And they had period shooting ranges. So at the very far end, they were shooting cannons. And as you moved up the line, there was like World War II stuff, World War I stuff. There was Korean War stuff. There was guys dressed like Nazis and tanks driving around the property, blowing up refrigerators and stuff and setting stuff on fire. I mean, it was crazy. And then you just keep on going down the line. It was like modern firearms. And this was all some rich dude had like paid for all this stuff, and these guys are just out there blowing up stuff. And here's me, the lone black dude out here in the middle of Tennessee, and folks is hugging on me and taking pictures with me and shaking my hand and talking. They're just so glad that I'm speaking about the right to keep and bear arms and bringing it to the community. And I'm thinking, this is some nutso stuff here. And then I go home, and I can't even get my book in a black bookstore because they say, well, we ain't gonna put that on there because that's promoting violence to our people, brother. I can't believe you doing that. I'm thinking, I'm trying to save us, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah. that is some bizarro stuff. I would have been shocked at that as well. And it's really shocking considering, I mean, this is years ago, obviously, but you can think about what's going on today with all this craziness, and to hear that about what you dealt with before, especially in Tennessee. It's like, man, you know, so. You know, I didn't know what to think about that other than,
dude, it gets worse. I've been, my mind been blown so many times. I brought the NRA brought a program they called Eddie Eagle program back in 92-93. They had this little thing where the Eagle says, you know, if you see a gun, it's for the children. They make a children thing, gun safety for kids. And I brought this program to Washington D.C. We had like a black family reunion celebration. Kathy Hughes radio station, Radio One, had this annual event at the Washington Monument. 2,000 brothers and sisters getting together. There's music, there's food, stars are singing. And I got the NRA a booth there to publish, the give their free stuff out about gun safety in the community. Man, they gave out all their stuff, which they never do. So as a response, I got a Civil Rights Award from the National Rifle Association. They flew me and my wife to Phoenix, Arizona, to one of their national meetings. I'm on the stage with Charlton Heston back in the day. And they had me on the stage walker. They gave me this big plaque for bringing gun safety to our community, for being an advocate for the right to keep and bear arms for all people. And 40,000 dudes alike from ZZ Top stand up and cheer. And my wife looked at me and said, "These your people. I ain't never seen no stuff like this." I said, "Yeah, me either." So my whole attitude had to change. I had to become unprejudiced, because the love and stuff I seen on the back end didn't equal nothing that I had grew up with. So in my whole role since 1991 as a gun rights activist, the racism has been mostly from our people, just who don't know. So I have to like undo what the propaganda has told them that they can't trust. And right. It's been a strange role, man.
Wow. But listen, that's a really encouraging story, because sometimes I'm often saddened by the things that I've seen and hear, especially on the news and all that kind of stuff. So that's really an encouraging story, man, that so many people are embracing you and want you and want us, I would assume, other people to be just as strong and adamant about gun rights as they are. Yeah.
As I learned about even the Deacons of Defense, I learned about King, remember when King was... did it march on Selma?
Yes.
All right. There were freedom riders, they call them, Ku Klux Klan folks, who came into town to make sure that those guys did not make it to that bridge that Sunday. Did you know that they were like war vets, black soldiers that had their firearms that were going to protect all those folks who came from out of town? They did like walks around their homes. They marched around their camps to keep the Klan from attacking the visitors, the civil rights workers who had come in to be on that bridge. And local stores wouldn't give those guys ammo because they had military style rifles. You know that the NRA actually gave them some ammo to protect the brothers and sisters that was down there.
Now, see, that's a story that needs to be out there.
Yeah.
Evermore. I did not know that. I did know that Deacons of Defense did provide protection for numerous civil rights groups, but I did not know that particular story. And that needs to be out there. And NRA needs to push that. I mean, they really, really do. I don't know if they do or not, but I've never heard of it.
And here's the part that messed me up. Why weren't they pushing that story out? They would let me say it. They would give me all the facts. They would show me all the documentation. They would lead me to people that I could prove the stuff. But here's where the racist part comes in at. If you got a good old boy who he ain't too sure about black people, but he will pay his rent, he will give his NRA dues before he pay his mortgage, you don't want to offend your money base. So they would cater to that good old boy, knowing that dude ain't all there. So they would have their functions. It's all country and western. Their functions all look like it's catering to the folks that they ain't cool at all. But the management, the inner workings, the people who making stuff happen, they're cool.
Mm. Wow.
And they play that game for my whole tenure in this whole movement.
Wow. Yeah.
They'll take his money, but they ain't like him. Yeah. And he ain't got the sense to see that he being used.
Yeah, see, now I think that they could get a lot more traction if they would really kind of cater to us all, and that's really disappointing. But listen, I guess everybody follows the money. I mean, you're going to do what you got to do for the money's sake.
So. And you got to be extreme. I don't learn that, too. That's been my failing. If you toe the middle, if you say, I'm going to be a common sense guy, I'm not going to offend anybody, I'm gonna talk to that lady who thinks that I'm wrong, and I'm going to get her to win, that takes a lot of energy, a lot of compassion. But if you just go to the hard side and you get them jokers all reveled up, you ain't got to work that hard. So the extreme will say, yeah, I give you my dollar, and you ain't got to do nothing.
Right.
That's where they stay. That's our politics now. People don't want to be in the middle. They want to be with sensible people. They go to the extremes because that's where people will throw their money down with their attitudes.
No, that makes sense. So tell me how we can change the mindset of black people. How can we get them to be more? And I'm not saying you have to be pro-gun, but I think that everybody ought to not, at least number one, not be scared of guns. And number two, have some kind of active role in defense. You don't have to go out to the range every week, but at least do something to protect yourself. Tell me how we can change the minds of black people.
This question has hit me a million times. And because I've been doing this now a while, I'm learning that it's only time. Time, the internet, Google, there's been so many. I'm no longer the only pro-gun black guy out here anymore. There are hundreds of us now, and they're all over Facebook. There's social media. There are ranges opening up. There's groups. Folks are shooting. The National African American Gun Club has opened up. Growth is happening, but it's slow, and it's gonna be that way. We're gonna be okay after a while. It's the reason why it took us 400 years to get off the plantation. We could have left probably in 10 years if folks had got themselves together and organized and just beat down their oppressors. But nah.
Yeah, that's a true statement. And I appreciate that. Yeah, it's going to take some time, and I hope that we all can really see some things. So we know since the election of Trump that gun ownership, black gun ownership, has gone up. And this is what you're talking about, the ranges and the National African American Gun Association, things like that.
Yes.
How do you feel about that? Besides the election of Trump, I mean, well, I guess it ties into the election of Trump. Do you think that is sparking and pushing a lot of this, or what?
Yeah, it definitely helped. People who were asleep. People who are on the fence, people, the fear thing is huge. Mm. Folks don't move till they get a catalyst. And the fear thing just motivated them to do something that the 70s didn't do, that the bombing of national organizations didn't do, the attack on civil rights leaders didn't do. It was always, well, that happened to them. It ain't going to happen to us.
Yeah,
so,
man. Yeah.
So we're a little slow.
Yeah.
But it's coming around.
Yeah, and that's so disappointing. And like all those events that you mentioned, you think that we would have gotten it together a long time ago and said, hey, you know what? Listen, we need to protect ourselves. We really need to do something. And kudos to those Deacons of the Fence and the Black Panthers and all those other groups, people that said, you know, we're not going to take this. You know?
We had Black Wall Street. There's so much stuff in our history that folks don't know.
Yeah. Going back to this whole religion thing about church and everything. And one thing that I grew up in church, as I mentioned, and one thing that I really, really regret is every Sunday we would go to church and we would learn Jewish history, a Jewish myth or folklore, right? We're learning about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We're learning all about Daniel and lions and all that kind of stuff. And for years we're doing that. And then black people don't know their own history about Wall Street, the Buffalo Soldiers, all the civil rights movement. I talked to a girl one time who was 25 years old at the time, and she had no idea what the civil rights movement was.
Yeah,
and this is a problem, and I think that more of our organizations, civic organizations, religious organizations, really need to push our agenda and push our history, and so we can have some sense and some pride, and so we can understand what it is, and maybe we won't have these problems moving forward, and maybe we won't have these problems with getting people out to vote and all this other stuff. We really just understood our history.
Education got us off the plantation, and education will keep us free.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I wanted to ask you about the real reason I want to talk to you is about open carry. We see a lot of people open carrying. Now, this was a big deal a few months ago, but I was doing an episode for another podcast, just doing some research, and you know, as you veer off into these different tributaries, as I call them, I came across to something talking about open carry and the difference between when white people open carry and when black people open carry. And I want to get your thoughts on just, number one, the whole open carry debate. Should people be allowed to do it? I think it's the University of Texas at one time was letting your students open carry. And just what your thoughts on about black people open carrying, but white people open carrying, and just people overall, just generally.
The reason is important. If you are open carrying and you're on your own property, I'm all for it. If you are open carrying just to prove a point that you have the right to, you run the risk of getting shot. If you're carrying a gun for your self-protection, then nobody should know you have it on you unless you are representing the government, i.e. you're wearing a badge and you have a uniform on. If you are doing it for protection, nobody should know you have a firearm on. You are taking away the element of surprise. You're taking away your defense. Porcupines have quills, and you know not to grab them because you've probably been stuck before. There's a whole bunch of animals that fangs and talons, that stuff does not come out. Even a cobra, that fang does not come out until it's about to bite you. You want to make sure that if you are doing it, that your reasons are right. And I don't believe you should be showcasing and telling people what you got, because you take away some of your power when you do that. It is a difference in perception, whether you are white or black. It just happens to be, that's just the way this world is. We have been programmed to believe that if you're a good guy, you wear a white hat. If you're a bad guy, you wear a black hat. There is a perception that if you are a good guy with a gun, you are not necessarily a black guy with a gun, right, unless you are law enforcement, right, military, and they can see that from afar. You're going to have to be in the right area before it's cool. It right. is not universal. Right. I want it to be a Star Trek world where the blue guy and the yellow guy can hang out. We haven't got there yet.
Yeah.
I've been trying for years to be on that same court, but it is too easy to be misdiagnosed on your intentions. You can be an undercover cop and be dogged by your peer who pulls up on you and says, man, I seen your gun. And you got to do a whole bunch of talking and secret code signing for them not to blow your cover. I mean, it's just the perception. You can't see what's in somebody else's heart, what's in their mind, the fear factor that happened. And you don't want that happen to you when you're out with your family. You don't want that out when you're out doing whatever. So it's real.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree with that. I mean, I saw a couple. Now, it's not very common here in Connecticut, but we had a couple of guys in a couple towns over doing this stuff. And then I was at a restaurant, a fast food restaurant. And I just saw this couple walking around. There were just these 45s on there. And I mean, they were huge cannons on their side. I'm like thinking, why?
Statement.
You know, let me just ask you, what is the rationale for doing any of this?
Showing off.
Just showing off. Yeah. Just to prove that they can, right?
They can. Yep.
Yeah.
That negates the protection issue.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah. It's a barbecue gun now.
Yeah. And so they are just trying to make a point, trying to prove a point that they can. And I completely agree with you. I don't think that it's necessary. I think that the element of surprise is gone, number one. And some people would say that negates the fact that someone might want to try them because they see that this person is armed. You know, that's one argument that I've heard before, one that I don't particularly buy, but that's an argument that's out there. You know, the whole open carry debate.
Because as a law enforcement officer, weapon retention is a real deal.
Right.
And if you have not trained to hold on to your firearm, that's a whole nother ball of wax right there.
Exactly. 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 Do you think that some people feel that they are more entitled to own a gun and to walk around than other people?
Absolutely.
And that's too bad.
And if you got a real, real pretty gun and a real pretty holster, it probably don't have retention straps on it.
Oh, I'm sure it don't.
And you would be in shock if you do, you know, when you're in the academy and you get the blue gun and they do that gun takeaway drill.
Right.
And how stressed out you get when that joker grabs your firearm and you got to wrestle him to the mat and how your heart break. Ain't nobody practice that.
Right. No, they don't. No,
and then. We carry a vest to protect us from the round that we carry in the chamber in case we lose our firearm. Most of the folks who open carry do not have a vest on.
It's sad what these people are doing. Let me get your thoughts on these recent shootings that we've been having. You know, 3 in 1 week, the festival in California. We had El Paso, Dayton, Ohio.
Man, a lot of talk about mental illness, a lot of talk about white supremacy and hate groups. What I see is... It goes back to, it's a spiritual issue. We got folks who have no hope in anything. And it's not an active shooter. It's suicide with a gun. It's the same as if we had the murder suicides. When you go to a house and they've shot all their relatives and then turned a gun on themselves. What we just saw in the last couple of days has been public murder suicide. They were hoping to get off by blue. Most of them don't have an exit plan. They change their mind at the last minute and decide to turn themselves in if they can. But I believe it's like, my life sucks. I'm going to kill a whole bunch of people before I either take my own life or I let a cop shoot me or a cop gets me or a citizen gets me. It's just that on a bigger level. And then as they get involved in the political arena and people are throwing questions at them and trying to put them in a pigeonhole, then they'll say, yeah, I don't like Mexicans, or I belong to this group. No, you were, if you go back and look at their life, they were suicidal. They were hopeless. They had some evil issues. It's not always mental. A lot of mental people don't even, they hurt themselves. We just take like these easy answers because the media loves to put you in a box, because then they can like call you whatever. It's a sickness, but it's a murder thing. They just do it on a grander scale. They want to go out in a blaze of glory. It's ego. It's just plain evil.
Yeah. I don't always buy the mental illness case. I do think there, obviously there's some terrorist groups out there, white supremacist terrorist groups. But I also like what you said about the people who have no hope. And I think that if we had better job security, better advancement as far as economics, then I think that this would not be an issue. And I think that a lot of people, particularly when it comes to white supremacy, that they're blaming other people for taking their jobs, taking their land, and this, that, and the other. Yep. But it's really just a matter of economic insecurity. Their jobs have gone overseas, and now they have nothing to fall back on, and they're looking for someone to scapegoat and to blame. And so that's my take on it. And so, yes.
The Klan was built on that.
Yeah. They're coming here taking our white women, and they're taking...
Yeah. taking our land and our white women. Yeah. Always back to that.
Yeah. I'm hoping that our politicians really can do something. What can be done? You know, I'm not really sure about it myself. I'm obviously taking... You're not going to eliminate every single gun. People who have firearms or any type of AR type of rifle are not going to give it up. If anything, it'll be more of a stockpiling going on.
Every time this happens, gun sales go up.
Right.
Because we hate to lose. So we're going to fear loss, man, motivates us to say never again and buy one more AR just in case I can't get one next week. And then on top of that, nothing, you can't legalize, you can't stop anybody from doing anything. Not one law has stopped murder.
Right. Right.
People will still commit stuff with sticks. We got a knife. Knifings are increasing. Stabbings have increased.
There was just one the other day. Four people got killed or something like that.
Yeah,
that was just
yeah.
The other day.
It has nothing to do with guns. Not at all. It's just the people.
Yeah. So last question I want to ask you about or talk to you about is this whole Second Amendment thing. Now, I'm reading a book called Loaded, Discriminatory History of the Second Amendment. It's by a lady, PhD, Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. Have you heard of her or heard of that book?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, it's a really good book, and she talks about the history of the Second Amendment, going back to the good old cowboy days, the frontiering days, a settler colonizer mentality. Talks about how white men, 16, 17, 1800s, were actually mandated to own guns.
Yeah,
because they never knew when they would be rounded up as a posse. Mm-hmm. to either attack the Indians or track down some runaway slave. So it's a really interesting book, but I just want to get your thoughts. I know you haven't read the book, never heard of it, but just her assessment as far as the Second Amendment being really, her assessment is that the whole Second Amendment was put in place at the time when the Constitution is being framed, in that white males were obviously with the dominant people and they wanted to stay the dominant people. And that was the reason for the Second Amendment. In order to maintain their dominance, they had to have this particular Second Amendment. And she goes on to state that there were other laws that talked about militias, other constitutional amendments that talked about a regulated militia and all this kind of stuff. So why is it in there two times? And her premise is that the Second Amendment really had to deal with white men just keeping their status.
So without reading her book, I would assume, maybe even wrongly, that she thinks that the Second Amendment is irrelevant for today.
I'd say no.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The whole Constitution of the United States was written in a time when black people were not free. All the pieces in there are evergreen, though. And even though we didn't get acknowledged as a whole person for a long time, it applies to us now. And I believe that the Second Amendment is still valid today because people haven't changed. We have DVDs and CD players and MP3s and social media and a whole bunch of stuff that didn't apply back then. We have semi-automatic firearms and we have firearms that can shoot way better than the muskets of the day. That stuff has increased. But mankind, our greed, our evil, our avarice, all that stuff is still the same. So you still need to be able to protect yourself, protect your family. Trump has showed us how the government can just do almost what it wants. And stuff that you thought that nobody would ever say as a president, he's broken all those.
Yeah.
And if he were able to get the Congress, if he were able to get the Republicans and the Democrats and whoever to change things, it is stuff that is written in this Constitution, as old as it is, to help us, the regular people, to remain free. Right. We aren't that far. Even though we got all this technology, we are not that far from craziness because people haven't changed.
I agree with you. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. That really was eye-opening. I did not know you were reverent. Your take on weapons and African-Americans owning guns is really revolutionary in my mind because of the place that I came from, very liberal blue state Connecticut. So I'm glad it's good to hear some people who actually have some sense, some real hunters and fishermen out there who know what they're talking about. So thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it very much.
Man, hope I ain't blab too much. And
no, man, not at all. If you got more to say, say on. Say on, brother. I can listen to you all day, man. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank
you so much. I appreciate you.
All right. Black Man with a Gun. Thank you very much for all the work that you're doing. Keep up the good work. Don't become discouraged. I certainly appreciate it. You're one of the reasons that I really want to do this podcast. I was listening to other podcasts and thinking, man, that's what they're talking about is interesting and all that. Then I come across you one day like, oh, man, you know, he's doing that. Other people are doing this. And some people are podcasting about putting on lipstick. So I'm like, you know what? Let me get in this game here. I think I got something to say and something to contribute to the conversation. So and try to make this world a better place. So thank you very much.
I'm gonna flip it and get you on the show, too. Oh, so we cross-pollinate.
Absolutely. I definitely appreciate it. Thank you so much, my brother.
You're welcome, my man.
Okay. Take care. We'll talk to you. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Once again, I'd like to thank my special guest, Ken Blanchard, the Reverend Ken Blanchard, for coming on to the show. Make sure you check out his Speak Life podcast for anyone who's interested in more of the religious aspects that he's got going on. Speak Life podcast. Also check out his book, Black Man with a Gun, A Responsible Gun Ownership for African Americans. Look him up on Amazon. He's got a bunch of material. If you go to his website, blackmanwithagun.com, that's blackmanwithagun.com. He's got well over 625 episodes just from that particular podcast, Black Man with a Gun podcast. He's also got a store where you can buy a number of his t-shirts. So please check him out. Make sure you patronize him, support what he's doing. I think everything that he's doing as far as the Second Amendment and African-Americans protecting themselves is great. He's a former law enforcement officer himself, worked with the CIA. He was also in the military as far as the Marines. So check him out. Make sure you give him a lot of love and a lot of support. And thank you once again to the good Reverend Ken Blanchard for coming on the show. The name of the book that we were both trying to come up with and think about was Negroes with Gun, Robert F. Williams, Negroes with Gun. So make sure you guys also check that book out and check out anything that has to do with history, gun rights and gun ownership and everything like that. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you guys enjoy the interview. Let me know what I'm doing right. Let me know what I'm doing wrong. Hit me back on the email, hunterpolicetraining@gmail.com, hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com. Hit me up on Twitter, CPTL Hunter. That's Captain L. Hunter. Instagram, CPTL Hunter, Captain L. Hunter. Let me know what I'm doing right. Let me know what I'm doing wrong. Thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, you guys take care. Much love and peace.